Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
What's up, everybody? It's Joe LaPuma. You are listening to the Complex Sneakers Podcast. I am here with my two guys, my two co-hosts, Mr. Matt Welty.
Here we are today for a fun one.
Okay, his audio levels. I don't know if it's the audio levels or he's just a little more excited than usual, but all right. I like that energy. And of course, a skeptical Mr. Brendan Dunn or what? You all right?
No. I'm happy to be here as per usual. But enough about me. This isn't about me. One of us had a very special occasion over the weekend.
What was that?
Can we talk about it, Joe?
Sure. Yeah, let's do it.
Because I had no idea. Welty, did you have any idea that this was coming this past weekend?
I don't even know what you're talking about. So
yeah, he doesn't because only one of my co-hosts wished me a happy birthday. So thanks, Don. Appreciate it.
I didn't know it was your birthday.
It's okay. You sent the I'm a Meniere threes, but no happy birthday request. So
he had to flex on your birthday.
It's all good. Well, both of you got them and I didn't, but yes. Yeah. Celebrated the birthday. Thank you.
Happy birthday, Joe.
Happy belated birthday, Joe.
Thanks, Welty. I don't hold it against you. You know why I don't hold it against anyone? Because the dates are very tough to keep track of right now.
Yeah. Everything is liquid.
Yeah. But I had a good birthday weekend. You know what I did? I broke a pack of cards. It's called Breaking Cards.
Is that what it is? Yeah.
I finally did.
Cracked open some boosters? Or maybe you guys don't call them boosters in that world. But
no, I don't know what that is, but I cracked open a box of cards. NBA
Hoops. A whole box?
Yeah, NBA Hoops. I went to this card store in Long Island, and it has a lot of memorabilia. The same, remember I told you guys that I went a couple months ago, and yep. I bought some cards. I had no idea what I was doing, but I was like, hey, give me some new basketball cards, box, NBA Hoops, and apparently, do you guys know what the card to find is in all these new NBA 2021?
Was it Luka?
No. Close. No, the rookie. No, 2021 okay. Rookie. LaMelo. LaMelo Ball.
Oh, really?
Okay. Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah, for sure. For sure, yeah.
And I actually found one, but I don't know, you know, the grading and stuff like that. Maybe we get Josh Luber back on as a special consultant.
Okay. Did you have, like, white gloves on while you're doing
no.
it? Are we sure that thing is still a PSA 10?
No, but I did see, I was starting to look at these videos, and they're mm-hmm. very calming. Is that, like, the whole thing? Is that why it's blowing up?
Oh, like, interesting. Like an ASMR type thing where it just soothes you?
They're just super calming. Like, and I was like, all right, let me see. So I cracked open a box and yeah, got the LaMelo Ball rookie. And someone, if anyone knows anything about cards, maybe we grade it or whatever. But mm-hmm. it was cool. And then, yeah, Saturday night we watched Cudi on SNL. It was a nice little chill birthday weekend. So
back home in Long Island.
Home in Long Island. And
no special dinner, Joe?
No special dinner. Just, we got takeout and my parents and my niece and nephew came over. My sister, we had a cake and now, you know, I'm here back with you guys. So how was your weekend though?
Mine was good. A little bit of follow up from last week. I did get my structured triaxes in the mail that we were talking about. And I'm a little disappointed. You didn't get your pair yet?
No. From Hibbett Sports.
Yeah. Here's the thing.
What happened?
If you remember our discussion last week, we were saying how we weren't sure if that was a sneaker where you could wait a little bit for it to go on sale and grab a coupon code and get it for 20 off. And 2 days after we bought them with the help of Riley Jones, Riley, I'm not putting this on you, but multiple sites were posting coupon codes where you could get the Structured Triax 91 for $20 off or something like that. So I'm happy to have them, but I'm a little let down that I didn't hold out to be more frugal.
I was going to say, that's what we get for saying Riley Jones was the all-time assist leader. And then,
he still is.
Yeah, he still is, of course.
We jump the gun? I don't know.
Any big sneaker news? It's been a little quiet. What about the Nike refurbishing the sneaker news that came out yesterday?
Oh, my God.
What? Not into it?
It's just like it seems like a good thing on the surface, but it's like Nike's like, how do we expand profits by like 20%? It's like, buy back your old shoes and sell them to you again.
Maybe I should be as cynical as you are, but I feel like it's more about recycling and reducing a carbon fiber footprint and things like that.
I don't think so. I think that that's what they tell you, but it's really about money at the end of the day.
Does it have to do with you not wanting to ever wear?
No, it's just like we've reached maximum profits. How do we get the company to estimated TK billion dollars? And it's like, how about we sell the shoes again that you already wore?
Okay. That's your read on it. It would be funny to test it out when it actually does happen and see what they are willing to accept. I mean, a lot of people are making jokes about them trying to compete with Flight Club or something like this. This is obviously not that. Nobody is going to take a pair of Jordan 11s and try and get Nike to refund them. And it's, you know, like all those coveted sneakers you just resell for resell prices anyway, because Nike's not going to resell them for anything other than the retail price as far as I've seen. So it's not anything like that. But I do think it is an interesting program and new territory for Nike.
On the housekeeping tip, both of our season finales, full size run sneaker shopping. We wrapped up season 12 of sneaker shopping with Hall of Famer, NFL Hall of Famer, Michael Strahan, the host of Good Morning America. And you guys had a great episode with Waka Flocka.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of fun.
And now we regroup.
Are we going on vacation?
I wouldn't call it on a vacation. We're not going on vacation. Khaled said that maybe he's island hopping. Maybe we describe ours as a little bit of an island hop, if you know what I mean.
We're not going on break just yet. The shows, those two that you know and love, are going on break. But this Complex Sneakers podcast thing is not going anywhere. And actually, let me rephrase that. It is going somewhere. It's going up.
It is going up.
But we'll talk about that next week.
That's all we'll say about that. But yeah, it's been... As we look forward to the new seasons of these shows and heading into spring, summer, I feel really optimistic about what the next seasons look like. And I think, I'm really excited for it.
Yeah.
Brendan, you said that you walked past Ame Leondor once again, but refused to go inside.
Yeah, why not?
I do need their new 550s in a size 5. So we'll figure that out at some point. But I don't know. I walk past there many a Saturday, many a Sunday, mask on, of course, and it's always such a scene. And I don't know what I'm going to do there, you know?
Okay, that's fair. I hear you.
I mean, it's not that I don't like their product and stuff like that. It just seems like now's not the right time to be mingling. And I don't know.
All I know is that in a couple of weeks, you and I are going to break some card packs. Welty, you could come too, and we're going to have some.
We're going to be out of Mulberry?
Yeah, Manhattan specials, breaking card packs. Maybe you do the magic card. I do the NBA hoops pack, and that's where
I'll be there. You know what it is? Like the first time you go into a store, you know, sometimes you walk by a store a lot of times, and you're like, I don't really know if it makes sense for me to go in there. But once you figure it out that first time, then you feel fine.
Once you figure out the equation.
Yeah, I don't have anything against Ame Leondor. I think they have a lot of nice clothes and a lot of nice products.
Oh, for sure. Killing it.
You know.
I had a wild one this weekend.
King of wild.
Not really.
Go ahead.
Yes.
What happened?
Don't back down now. Tell us how wild it was.
Went to dinner with a handful of friends on Saturday night. Decided to go to a Korean barbecue joint in New Jersey, and as my friends are known to do, got a little too crazy with it. Turned the grill up to full blast. We ended up like smoking out the Korean barbecue joint. There was like a big funnel of smoke that came, and like three employees like ran over and started like freaking out that we were going to set off the smoke alarm.
What are you doing? What
did they kick you out or what?
No, but I think there was subsequently a whole bottle of sake poured on the grill that resulted
to put out the
no. I don't know. It's like in Benihana's. Don't they pour like liquor on like the grill and shoots up the flames? I don't know.
Oh, well, I'm never going to dinner with you guys.
It's fun time. Joe, live a little bit.
Yeah, I know.
It's a beautiful day outside right now.
Nice. Did you guys get outside today? I told you.
I did not. But you know what? I've been watching closely. So I was going to try and take a little walk down the block before this, but I didn't manage to. But I am paying close attention because I have right on my fire escape a family of mourning doves. So
yes, I've seen your Twitter feed.
I've been debating really chronicling this saga, but they built a nest about a month ago, and then we saw some eggs, and so there's two babies right now. Their names are John Ford and Cosmos, and we thought maybe this morning that one of them had died.
Wait, you named the mourning doves?
I mean, they're part of the family. They live right there on the fire escape. But
good for him.
One of them was missing this morning, and my brother was certain that it had died, but I think maybe they're just out gathering food or something like that. So it's been a real journey for me. It's very representative of springtime, you know, the being born and the renewal. You know what I mean?
And are you like me where you check the hour? We're in that temperature zone of where hour to hour, it's vastly different.
It's
you guys
crazy. Don't want to talk about the birds anymore? We're already off that?
No, I mean, I think that was a good blip, and we'll continue. We'll keep us updated week to week, definitely. But I wanted to go back to your point of like it being a nice day and you kind of planning the fire escape visit. But do you check the hour to hour? Because we are in that, like I said, that zone of temperature where 1 hour is vastly different than the other. So I always look like, all right, at 2 o'clock, it's going to be 57. And then you look and it starts out like 45 to 57. And then I try to plan the walks or going outside at the height of the temperature, because it's not that hot out right now. But when the sun is shining, feels great. Feels great in New York City. Things are pointing in the right direction, hopefully.
Little bit of sneaker convo I feel like maybe we could have before we get this all cracking. A little point that I had realized this past week that I think I tweeted it out, but caused quite a bit of conversation. Wanted to talk to you guys about it. That's just a topic. I feel like it feels like.
I didn't see it, but okay.
No, it wasn't about that. It's just I want to like have like a little sneaker conversation, you know? It feels like Adidas has had a couple pretty hot releases in the past like few weeks.
Doesn't it? People were upset when you said that?
Yeah, I mean, not that. It's just like
I agree with you.
So do I.
I feel like Adidas has been cold for a little bit, and the past like month or so, you've seen like the Bad Bunny forums went absolutely nuts. Those
I was surprised.
The Yeezy Foam Runners going that shoe, that release of that, the re-release or whatever, the subsequent release went crazy, and like. People feel really excited for those Tally Campus 420 shoes, which is...
Yeah, I was not expecting that. The South Park collaboration.
Not at all.
Like it's going to be a big deal.
Maybe they were taken back by your tweet because it's all hype sneakers that you mentioned. And that's not usually your vibe.
No, but I wasn't expecting Adidas to have, like, not to, like, hate on them at all. It's just, like, it feels like they haven't had energy in that
unexpected little run.
Listen, Bad Bunny, we did it for the 100th episode and people were like, who is this? Bad Bunny is a megastar. He performed awesome at WrestleMania. The shoes are really good, I think, and I'm not surprised that partnership so far is working out great. Again, the Foam Runners, the gray and blackish ones, right? Speckled?
Yeah, the one that looks like it's like acid wash or whatever. Yeah,
they're great. But Welty, another pair that I want to talk about that I really liked is those new ZXs you got.
Oh, too. The overkill ones. Yeah. Brendan got them.
Joe, I got them too, just so you know.
How are the I'm a Meniere 3s in person? You know, we've seen them online and there's been talks that it's going to be one of the sneaker of the year. It lives up in person, I'm sure, does it?
Beautiful looking shoe.
Yeah, it's definitely really nice. I mean, we saw it in the video that we did with Tony, but like, I thought like it was dope how on like the heel tab, like James put the writing on the back of it that you didn't see on the, you know, the release photos of it.
And they just rolled out some raffle information for the shoes today and kind of following up on that promise of making sure that women have access to the sneaker. There's like a women's only raffle is the first way I think they're going to release them. So really cool to see them kind of pursue that route.
That really was cool. Cause like when we put out all the content, it was like, people were like skeptical that he said that. And it's like, how can you do that? You know, how can you actually do a woman's first raffle? And then he unveiled the plan for it. And it seems like it makes a lot of sense, you know?
Yeah.
That's great. Great initiative, great project, great product, great execution. So shouts to James and everyone at the Whitaker Group and Ama Meniere.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
All right, I told you guys Welty was excited. Let's get to today's guest. Our guest on today's podcast has built a business on accumulating one of the best sneaker collections for sale in the world. Known to travel overseas for product and stock some of the rarest sneakers, he has turned his warehouse into a one-of-a-kind experience for customers looking for an intimate shopping experience that focuses on properly sourced product you can't get anywhere else. For the sneakers is collectible art crowd, you'll find many in this collection that fits this mold. To get more specific, the collection boasts over 4,000 and growing pairs of sneakers that include signed PEs, one-of-ones, and even the Jordan 11's MJ worn Space Jam. With such rare pairs comes a who's who of celebrity clientele that includes Beyonce, Drake, Jay-Z, Kylie Jenner, and most notably, Travis Scott. Chances are if you've seen LaFlame in a pair of sneakers you needed to phone a friend to identify, they came from Project Blitz. We're here to talk all the eras of collectible sneakers with the owner of Project Blitz. Please welcome to the Complex Sneakers Podcast, Andre Lustina, a.k.a. Croatian Style.
Joe, thanks a lot, bro. That was actually a great intro, man. I couldn't have said it better myself.
Appreciate it, brother. Thanks so much for taking the time. Your friend is very excited. I think you know. I think you know who it is, but we appreciate you chopping it up with us.
No, absolutely. Absolutely.
Dre, we want you to take us back. Can we start at the beginning?
Go for it. Let's go.
Can we start like 1990, you know, you picking the pumps over the Jordan 5s, or what was that first sneaker moment that you really remember?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of them, but you know, that's the one thing is like every authentic story, because obviously we know in the whole sneaker world there's a lot of unauthenticity out there, right? But you know, for myself, yeah, I was like in the sixth grade and it was like a big deal. So the Jordan 5 was like a whole kind of pinnacle point growing up because of that reflective tongue. It was something new. It was amazing. And I always loved 3M after that. So when the Dunk Pros started coming out with, you know, the 3M all over the uppers and whatnot, it was like, it just always brought me back to that Jordan 5. And, you know, I chose the Reebok pump over it because, you know, you get one shoe a school year. Mm-hmm. I was like mowing lawns, like whatever I could kind of push, mm-hmm. kind of like silly, just kind of cleaning the neighbor's windows and whatnot, getting $5 here and there and just kind of putting it into like having one extra shoe for the year. It was during that time and it was either kind of getting the Jordan 5 black silver or the Reebok pump that just came out. And I was like, man, look at the gimmick. And, you know, so it was kind of funny. It's like you have like the schoolyard showpiece and like the Reebok pump became, you know, the gimmick. So it's kind of like all the girls wanted to pump your tongue up. And it was kind of like, that was like the, you know, yeah.
You were the man at school because you had the Reeboks on?
Yeah. Yeah. Everyone wanted to touch me and touch the pumps. I mean, it's kind of funny, but when you say it like that, but you know, it was, that was realist. That was like the Rolex of the schoolyard during that year. After that, it kind of lost its luster, but that Jordan 5 was always something that was like, man, I needed it. And when it came back in 2000, I was already dealing with sneakers and stuff. So it was like a big deal for me when the Jordan 5 came back out.
And then I like that you definitely remember distinct stories, because the Bordeaux 7 and the hoop shot story was another one a little earlier. Yeah, the hoop shot that you know, you were just sinking them at the what was that? What happened there?
Okay, so you saw that that little video. That is like amazing. I don't know. You guys had, where'd you grow up?
I grew up in Long Island.
Okay, Long Island. Did you guys have Six Flags?
I've never been to Six Flags in my life.
Okay.
We had Adventureland, which is a smaller one in Long Island. And I remember what really struck me about this story is that the small basketballs to the big one was a big difference. So tell that story.
Okay. So for all that don't know, this was like a big deal. And it was, you know, there wasn't like Instagram and all this shit that you could flex on everybody and all this stuff. Literally, it was being a teenager or a young adult and being at Six Flags with like your crew. Being in LA, they had like, you know, the tougher guys, the gangsters and stuff. Everyone's wearing starter jackets, the Georgetown Hoyas, Bulls, this and that, Raiders especially. But one of the big things was these basketballs, right? So when you go to Six Flags, they have like these smaller rims that, you know, you have to literally have perfect shots. And to sink those, when you sink like one, then you get the little small ball and you get another, you could trade them in and get the big balls. And there were all the dopest college teams. So you had the Tar Heels, you had the Hoyas, you had Notre Dame, you had UCLA, all that stuff. So there's like four or five of us. Two of us were like a little bit better at the game or not. And I had the Bordeaux Sevens on, right? The originals from, you know, that year. And what was that? 92, right?
Right.
So yeah, sitting there. And then there was this dude, he was, you know, this tall guy who's playing with his girl. He was like, playing basketball, or you could see that he was like a big hooper or whatever, and he's just bricking him. And this, I forgot what it was like $2 or $5 a shot. I can't remember exactly the thing. And then I came out, here's me coming up like, you know, 12 years old or whatever, 12 13, and then like just popping him, because the easiest trick was doing the bank shot.
Yep.
Getting the bank shot in was the thing. If we made it on a switch, it was kind of a joke between us, but literally we were the crew that all had two big balls to us each. And everyone's just looking at us like, damn, these dudes are like killing it. Mm-hmm. So it's literally like as if we had two like bust downs on each wrist, mm-hmm. the crazy sneakers, the whole thing, but it's literally just these basketballs with the college hoop, and everyone's just looking. And, you know, the guy that was, you know, he was going back to the guy that was bricking next to me. He's like, he looked down, and that was the whole advertising campaign at the time. It was like, he looked down, and was like, man, it's got to be the shoes.
Really? In real life, this person said this? Like,
yes. Yeah, in real life. Said it to him, right? In real life. It was beautiful. It was beautiful. And like from that moment on, I was like, man, I just loved it. It literally was a part of me before that moment. And that just kind of like cemented in stone. When I look back, like look way back to that moment, it was literally like a calling. Like, I guess I'd end up being a part of sneakers and stuff one day. It's just like there was always something from my childhood that brought me in. There was no scene, there wasn't anything, right? Mm-hmm. It was just pure, like from TV to person, right? It, you know, and then it just translated all the way down. It's got to be the shoes. And you know, I mean I love that. That was like, for me, it was crazy.
And Dre, in speaking of it's got to be the shoes, you said that when you first got into reselling sneakers, it was 1999, the Air Jordan 4.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
How did, like, can you tell us that story and, like, how you ended up, like, flipping that shoe?
So, obviously, like, you're around, I don't know, you're probably in high school when Jordan was playing, when he was still playing, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, it was, you know, it was a big deal. Everybody, they didn't care about the retros. They didn't care. There was no retros. There was the 94 retros, the 1-2s and 3s. Nobody gave a shit at all. Like, nobody cared. They were, you know, you couldn't care less about anything that was the last colorway. It was all about who ditched class, who came in, who set foot with the new color that day. Right. And so the previous colors were okay, but it was like whoever had the new one. So even when it came to like athletes that a lot of people don't know, Rod Woodson, he was a cornerback on the Steelers. He had his own shoe. The, you know, the Agassiz, the Bo Jacksons, the Deons. So I mentioned Rod Woodson because I had those. He was my favorite player. I was a Steeler fan all the way back. And, you know, that you just can't replicate that ever again. Like, this was all athlete-driven campaigns, right? And their signature sneakers. Like on the West Coast, nobody cared about Air Force Ones. That's truth. Anybody that says, oh yeah, I was collecting Air Force Ones through the 90s. I don't know. You better show me some pics. Cause, you know, that just didn't happen. It literally happened that in the 2000s when that kind of, you know, maybe it's a couple guys, 98, 99. But yeah, it was all in the LA West Coast. It was all about the new signature shoes, the new Jordans, any other player, whatever it was, right? So nobody cared about those earlier retros until the point where I guess the 15s came about. It was like, you know, year 2000. Oh, I'm sorry, the 15s were like 99. And then the next year was the 16s, which was pretty good. But when the 14s and 15s came out, it was kind of like the last of the era. You know, like Jordan retired. He wasn't going to be wearing any new ones. It was the last shot. And then, you know, there wasn't anything really to look forward to in that level. And then it was the perfect timing for them to bring out something they didn't bring out before. And it was the Jordan 4. And so, like, I was in Europe, you know, in Croatia with my mom visiting family. And I guess those came out when I came back. A good friend of mine, like, growing up, Jay, he brought back a retro card from the Jordan 4 and was showing me that, oh, the Jordan 5s are about to come out. Didn't you always want it? And I'm like, oh my God, yeah. But then I was, you know, talking about what's the 4? And that's when I found out that they came out. And I was like kind of oblivious to it. I was like, didn't really, you know, keep up, wasn't in the mall. I told you, Jordan's gone. Nobody really cared anymore. Saw a picture of a 15 and I was kind of like, ah, like, I don't know what's going on here. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm, so, It, you know, it became, oh my God, like, yo, I'm going to start over again and be able to go way back to get the ones like I dusted. You know, dusted some beat up 4 when I was like a kid running around on the playground, mm-hmm. and able to get the 5 again. So that's when I found eBay, Nike Talk, and there was like the last remnants of Nike Park, which were those forums that are kind of like what Reddit are still today. But these are like what before blogs, before social media, before anything, you connected with everyone on like Nike Talk and, you know, even eBay. For example, and that's where I actually found where I had to turn to get a Jordan 4. And here I was, you know, international business and finance major, and I stumbled upon a guy that has my size, and he's like, oh, I want you know, it's like $20 more. And I'm like, dude, these things are like 99 plus tax. Like, what are you talking about? You really want, why was this guy want $20 more? It didn't make sense to me. So I'm going around. I went all over. I grew up in Hawthorne, California. Shout out to everybody from the South Bay, you know, all through Inglewood, Market Street, through Compton Indoor, which is gone. It doesn't exist anymore. I literally scoured the entire Southern California, found other sizes, didn't find mine, had to go back to the same dude, and the rest was history. And after that, I said, okay, cool. And like, I literally had to pay this guy a tip. So I didn't think about making a business out of it, but just let me buy 5 pairs, sell them all, make 20, $25 on each. And I get my Jordan 5s for free, basically. And that's what I did.
So that was the original intention, just to pay for your own habit.
That was the original intention. Get high off your own supply. So, and then, you know, here we go. Then all of a sudden that worked out. And then I said, okay, cool. Let me, you know, dabble in the rest of it. And through Nike Talk, I met so many people, especially like in Japan, and I just started getting dunks from Foot Action, dunks on sale that were at like Foot Locker.
How were you getting them? Were you just driving around to releases and just picking up as much as you could?
I mean, yeah, there was no releases. Like, there was no big lines. There was no lines until the Jordan 11s released. That was the first like line experience. I mean, well, a line is what, 5-10 people? That doesn't really count, right?
Right.
You know? But, you know, actually where there was a whole situation was the first time the Jordan 11s came out.
Did you line up for them?
Yeah, of course. I mean, I had to.
What was that like?
I had to at that point. I had camaraderie already. Oh, it was crazy. I mean, it was literally similar to what it was today, but on a smaller scale. Like, everybody was out there for the Jordan 11s because it was the first time they brought them back. It was like it was a huge thing. Every single color.
Overnight camping?
No. It was just the early morning. Get there at 8 a.m., open up at 10 type thing, 7:30, 8. That was like the earliest you had to do, period.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And how many pairs were you going for at that Jordan 11 release?
Jesus, I'm trying to remember which ones. I want to say the Space Jams were first, but I could be wrong. Could have been it might have been the Concords. But I think I got like 10 or 20 because I
Okay.
Because I had friends working it out too. So at that point, I was already like getting a bunch of different pairs from everywhere. And it was funny. I was going to all the hood spots. I was already trading stuff for Japan. So I was getting Brazil Dunks and Wheat Air Force Ones. This is now like 2000, 2001. Okay. Getting all these like different colors from Japan and hooking up the managers. And like, I was like, oh my God, I never seen nothing like this. And like, Dre, I got you, whatever you need. Calling other managers, like, yo, take care of this kid. Like, you know, and there was no one out there. No one was out there picking up this stuff. And I just had like this eBay thing that started growing with like size runs of Dunks and Forces. And you know, I got into Supreme, seeing it in the Japanese magazines and you know, going to Union LA. They're the first ones to get it. And then like Commissary had it out here and Huff in San Francisco had it. Just finding out everyone that had like Supreme, getting a little bit here and there. Meeting guys in New York and Demaney, that original founder of Flight Club. Me and him used to do a bunch of trading. I don't know if you remember JG, Joe, I think his last name was Gutierrez. We were doing a lot of his original site was Sneaker Pimp. Sneaker Pimp? I think it was.
Got you, Sneaker Pimp Joe. Yeah.
Remember. So, yeah, there was a lot of different New York heads and we were just doing a bunch of, you know, trading and hooking each other up. It was like it was a really good time, you know, like, you know, trading. Oh, let me give you 10 of these for 12 of these or something like that. It was fair. It was amazing. It was fun. You know, there was cool events back then too. Yeah. But anyways.
Dre, you ended up, after that, you ended up buying up like a lot of Nike SBs. Like that's kind of, I feel like how you ended up. I wouldn't say getting your cred, but like that's like when people were like really started to like know like who's this guy Croatian style, like why does he have all the Nike Dunks, right?
Yeah, I mean that whole situation when the SBs were about to come out, there were pictures and all this stuff. Everyone from Japan was like blowing me up. Even people that I've contacted before that would not do anything with me now were, it became a whole like scenario, and I mean, no joke. There's only a certain amount of stores in Southern California, but we had the most like aggregated Nike SB accounts, and I was able to accumulate a good heavy amount of all of it. I mean, who knows? Maybe half of LA at that time. It was like a big, it was a big deal.
And did the stores care that you were buying a bunch of pairs? Like, did anybody bat an eye? That's when you would come in and want every single pair that they had.
No. I was getting them for $69.99. Some of them like charged $10 extra, $79.99 or something like that. But literally, that's all it was. There was another place that was like, there wasn't really anyone out there. It wasn't like there was kids lining up. So they were just there, sitting there. There was a couple other people that are running around. That's where I met. I actually met Ben Baller at one of the stores. I don't really want to name store names or whatever, but you know, and everywhere I left, I always left a couple pieces behind. And, you know, we just had a quick conversation in passing and then I took my, my take, left a few and, you know, kind of went about my day and kept it going with like, a van and another friend that was like going places as I was calling around. So
what model was one of those early Nike SB hauls that you remember, like a day where you're like, you looked in the van and you're like, wow, I got a lot of these pairs, any model that sticks out?
I mean, look, honestly, that first run, it was like the three, the Molder, the Geno, and the Supa. If you guys, you know, for all those that aren't too familiar, it's the white, orange, blue Knicks color was the Danny Supa. The Geno Iannucci was the obsidian gray with the perforated, sides. Mm-hmm. And the Molder was the white and blue. The Reese Forbes came out like a couple weeks later after that. But, it was those three that came out simultaneously. And so that was just a huge haul over like a couple of days, literally filled up my parents' living room. It was, a few hundred pairs. And it was, but it was amazing because I was actually trading those things to all the big collectors in Japan. And I was getting like this, all these cool, that's literally where I started building my collection from, was trading these things that I paid $69 for. And the value there was like over 300 something. So I was literally getting all these cool vintage Air Force Ones, original Jordans, like, you know, all these cool Co-JP colorways of things. and just like stocking it up and filled up this walk-in closet. And that's when I think the first photos of that was like Retro Kid hit me up and we did a Soul Collector.
Nice.
Like a photo shoot with that.
Dre, the most infamous picture though, I think that you've taken over the years was your picture of the Paris dunks.
Right.
You
right.
had like, yeah. you had like 30 pairs. You had said that you like cornered the market on them, maxed out your parents' credit cards to accumulate all the Paris dunks, which those shoes are almost like not invaluable at this point, but if you can get your hands on a pair, they're like $50,000+. Like how many pairs did you get and how did you get them?
So yeah, the Paris was like a whole thing. I mean, we had, you know, they had all the other colors and they were going for $300. I remember there was a store that had Zoo Yorks in it and they were charging like $300. And I was like, dude, $300, that's crazy to pay that. Right. Mm-hmm. You know, the Supremes came out, they were going for like $300. I remember I got offered by people for like $250. I was like, man, I can't believe you're charging me, texting me $250.
For the Supreme SB Dunk Low.
Yeah. That's when the New York greed happened. And like, you know, me and Demaney kind of like stopped talking. Cause I was like, man, what? I can't believe you're not blessing me. Like I've been blessing you. So we can laugh about it now these days, but that was a funny moment where I was like, man, fuck this dude. He's like shysting me. Like, what's wrong with this guy? You know, we always like hashed it up, but it was just like a funny time. And so I saw the picture of the Paris coming out. And I was like, holy shit, this thing's going to change the game. It was the most beautiful thing I've ever seen as far as like any other colorway I've ever seen on a sneaker. It was something new, different. It was like real artwork from an artist. I was always like intrigued by art anyway. I was always following it as a kid. My dad was like, had all these Renaissance art books and all this stuff. I looked, you know, studied art in college. And to me, they were going to define what the next generation of like, sneaker value would end up being. And sure enough, like those are the first shoes that, you know, they went up on eBay for like, you know, $650 to $850. And I literally
unprecedented at the time.
Unprecedented. Nobody wanted to buy it. I got a good story about that. So I ended up buying a bunch from stores in Paris. I handled it with a couple people, one guy in particular that connected me with a couple other people. I took everything that they got. They only got a couple pairs each, all this stuff. They only like issued 148 out there. They were giving these shoes away at a Nike party and the kids were just taking them, throwing the box. I mean, we're talking about like early 2000 hipster Frenchie kids that were into music and partying. Didn't really give a shit about the shoe. They would tie the lace and throw them over the, kind of like they did the Orchard Street dunks in New York. They just tied them over and started throwing them on the power lines. And they're literally throwing away money, right? It's crazy. I bet you there's somebody out there in France that did that and seen them today going for like 60 racks plus. You know, I ended up accumulating about 33 of them at one time in the beginning. And
like you flew to Paris to get these?
I can't say like everything, but like there was a lot of different scenarios that was going on to accumulate those. It doesn't sound like a lot in this day's market, but it was literally a third of the ones that were out there, basically, right? Just under a third of the market. So I pulled them in. I basically had to become an authorized user on my parents' credit card. It was like a big deal. And I asked them, I said, look, you know, I came from real blue collar, immigrant Croatian family. I was born here, whatever. And so to them is like, dude, 30,000, it's a lot. That's a lot of money. Are you out of your mind?
On sneakers.
Like this would kill us. Yeah. They're never really too hot of what I was doing, even though I was bringing home a bunch of cash. They thought I was selling like, selling drugs and all this stuff. And I said, dude, this is literally legal drug money. And at the time the margins were insane, so especially when you're adding the Japan factor to it. So, I convinced them to let me use the card in full. There was like a 30 something thousand dollar limit. And that's how I went and was able to buy them all. And I said, look, if I can't do something with them by the time the bill comes in, I'm going to dump off like the collection that I've amassed. I mean, I had stock too, but I'll sell whatever I have just to keep these intact because I knew these were going to be something special. It's kind of like you don't think with your head, you think with your heart, your gut. You know, that's what I guess, you know, drives athletes and whoever to aspire for greatness. I guess that was my calling, was a stupid Paris Dunk, right?
And what was the most expensive pair of Paris Dunks that you've sold? Do you remember? Do you mind saying? From that.
From the original?
One
from
pair.
The original, the first one? Oh, I mean, okay. Well, I guess let me just continue. Continuation to that.
Okay.
So,
okay.
Literally, you know, I showed all my friends. They're like, man, that's crazy. That's wild that you did that. They're so dope. And one of my friends who usually paid the most for shoes, he's my boy Tan in New York. And funny guy. I think, Matt, you met him before.
Yeah.
But he asked for an 11 and a half. And I said, look, I'll give it to you for what I paid. And he's like, oh, man, I don't know if I want to spend that much on shoes. It kind of, you know what I mean? That's a lot. I think whatever it was, $850, let's say. And I was like, are you sure, dude? You love them, right? So, and then he's like, yeah, no, that's a lot. So I'm like, all right, man, nobody's taking them off my hands. They're like friends or whatever. So I'm like thinking, okay, November is gone. It's December now. My whole thing was to do these under the radar and just send them to Japan and put them in a consignment store over there and kind of just pop off the market at like 1200, 1400. And kind of just go from there and make a few $100 on each and see what happens. Mm. And all of a sudden this guy, I guess this guy flew in from France, dropped off a sizer and literally put them up for 900 each. And I was like, dude, this guy killed the market. So I'm like, damn, what am I going to do? It's December. Bill's about to pop off in January. So I'm like, damn, I got to figure something out. And nobody was buying those. So I was like, shit. So literally I had cash there. So I bought three of them, pulled those in. And then the other two kind of like followed. So they were gone. Nothing was on eBay. I think one more and I bought that one. And I'm like, all right,
so every pair that's going up on the market, you're taking it off the market,
taking it off,
buying it yourself,
even though they're not selling, you're buying more.
Yes, yes.
Okay.
So
okay.
Now we're at the point where there's like 33, and I'm like, all right, I really dug myself a big ass grave here. You know what I mean? Like, what am I?
There's no turning
more.
Back.
I'm digging.
Yes, and digging all more.
In. I'm digging so much that the dirt's starting to fall and trickle on my head over here. You know what I mean? So, the next point was like, all right, cool. I was kind of known for doing these like stock pick pictures on Nike Talk. And I did it with like the Stussy Dunks. You remember those? Like the brown and the black ones?
Of course.
Those are like a big deal.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So I was doing a bunch of these cool like shots with them. And I'm like, all right, I guess I just got to let it out there and just build some hype of this. So a friend of mine was helping me out and did it outside and just lined them all up so you could see how different they were. And just put all these pics up on Nike Talk and it became the craziest thread ever. And everyone was going nuts, like, oh my God, these are so dope. These are actually sick. They're all different. How did you get so many? They look incredible, like together like that. And then I just created this eBay listing that said basically get a price list of all the sizes and was like, okay, the first pair, $1,250. The next pairs, here's the price list. After this one sells, they all go up $200 each. And so it was kind of like a standstill. Is this going to work? And then all of a sudden in 2 days, boom, that listing goes down. It sells. The precedent has now been created. And the next one goes up immediately, $200 more. Guess who calls me first? My boy in New York.
Tan.
Yes.
Immediately.
Hey, we're going to laugh about this. I'm going to tell him to listen to this. Yo, have you still have that? You have the 11 half, right? Remember the one? I was like thinking about it. And I'm like, yeah, you know what? Maybe I should just get it. I was like, oh, really? What made you change your mind there? Did you? I was like, oh, I don't know. Let me see if I have. He's like, oh, but you didn't sell any. And I was like, oh, you must have seen the eBay list. Oh, no, I didn't see that. I was like, bro, I'm sorry, bro. I know you too well. I know you've seen that thing. So I know you saw that sale. So like, dude, I took the risk.
Buy them on eBay.
It is what it is. If you want it, I'll get it to you for that right now. He's like, come on, bro. Like, just get me. I was like, dude, come up with a trade. Trade me something because you got a bunch of stuff. Put it together. You paid a cheap price for those. And then we'll do it at that. And hallelujah. I was there ready to give it to you, but you didn't want to take the risk. I had to take the risk. And then after that, everyone, oh, bro, oh, this and that. Even the guy that was running the PlayStation Nike program back then. I forget his name. I believe it starts with an R. I think so. I forget exactly, but so this guy was just hoarding a bunch of those pairs and using them for his own purposes. And he hit me up, was like, oh, here, I want to get one. I'll give you one pair of these. PlayStations or something like that later on. I was like, come on, bro. You out of your mind? You got those for free. Figure something out.
So, Dre, I want to know, did you feel like right after that, that the rare sneakers were harder to get? Because in a way, you're setting this precedent for the market of there can be a shoe that costs $1,500, that costs $1,400. Was it immediately more difficult for you as a person who's engaging in this stuff?
No, but the game changed immediately because like the next one coming out was going to be the Tokyo and the London. I forgot which one was. Mm-hmm. I think the Tokyo came out next, but it was very plain. It was like a blank canvas. You know, it was supposed to be. Right. They had a whole event around it with all those Torada dunks and all those different things. Something I wish I was able to go to, but unfortunately I wasn't able to make it. But then that shoe came out and it was like, I think started going for $1,000 out the gate. And then the London one was the third, if I'm not mistaken. And that when that one hit, like everybody in London was kind of going crazy because they saw what was going on with the Paris. And the London,
right.
London came out, and that one instantly went $1,000 plus out the gate. You know, what it was like, 700 pounds or whatever it was. And then when it got announced that they had the Pigeon Dunk coming out in New York, that's when all the chaos happened. And that brought out everybody from all walks of life, from the hood, from Park Ave, from upstate. From Jersey. No, I wasn't there for that. But I heard.
How do you not show up for the Pigeon Dunk release in New York after you did the Paris thing?
Well, do you think I'm going to go fly out and I had no plug there? There's like, I knew there was going to be everyone and their mom was going to be out there, right? It literally was. So what's the point of me going out there? I was just trying to like figure out situations where I could get them off people and do some trades or whatever. You know, there's a point where it's like, okay, I got to work on that one remotely.
Gotcha.
And so that's what happened. Literally, that the craziness, that precedent was set, the pricing, all the whole SB market just went up from there because now, you know, there was a whole ceiling that all these other dunks were able to reach, and so you know, the Parises were going for more than original Jordan, 85 ones. They were going for more than. Than any other originals, except for like the highly coveted ones at the time, like original Carmine and things like that. But you know, it was definitely a defining moment in the whole sneaker world. There's mad people that just came into the selling space. Shoes now literally became a global commodity at that point.
And Trey, and then after that, you end up starting Project Blitz, which we can see part of behind you. You know, you mentioned earlier it's kind of a curated is a resale shop, but you're not open to the public. You do have a website, but you sell to like a very select clientele, very rare sneakers,
right?
Which, if you know, for those who can't see everything behind you, you know, you have like Ray Allen Jordan 11s, What the Dunks, Kobe Bryant Air Jordan PEs and whatnot. How did you end up, you talked about, you know, getting those shoes, but actually being like, this is a business. I'm going to get this collection of the world's rarest sneakers and sell it to the most high profile clientele.
I just started doing that even before in like the eBay days with the Croatian style. You know, I was meeting tons of people in the 2000s, like a friend of mine, you know, I was getting, there was like cash coming in. So I had friends I actually grew up with and they were promoting in Hollywood. I was out at clubs, and I was always wearing these crazy sneakers. And then there was just stylists and, you know, different various artists or people back in the day that I was like delivering sneakers to their hotel room and stuff. And it was all word of mouth. And it all became on, you know, I just said, oh, look on eBay. Here's the link. Go check out what I have on Croatian style. It's basically everything I have on there. And so,
do you remember the first celebrity where you showed up to your hotel room and you were like, I can't believe I'm here delivering this pair of sneakers to this person?
To the actual person and not like a filter between someone else. I mean, look, you know, like DJ AM, he wasn't like big at the time, but we were always talking online and DJ Homicide, same thing. Mm-hmm. I remember the first time I met Clark, it was also a thing because, you know, he was a big part of the whole sneaker scene. From the beginning, and music, of course, as well. I think the most interesting character and very like fun and cool guy was like Greg Street. He was like, you know, just randomly linking up with him at a hotel. I think Jadakiss was on the, I think the first rapper that actually delivered stuff to me or whatever.
Weren't you like selling like exclusive things to like Paris Hilton at the time too? Didn't you like mention that to me once?
No. I think you just saw a picture online and try to play some kind of roast mode on me or whatever. So try to roast me on something. But that was like at Art Basel that we were like sitting at the table and they kind of joined up. It was like a Mr. Chow party. It was pretty crazy.
You know, we'll dig more into the clientele, but DJ AM, for sometimes we have a young audience, they're not aware of how serious of a collector he was. And like, he was kind of, I always think about it, he was one of the first kind of in pop culture to hit the red carpet in exclusive sneakers. What was it like dealing with him?
I mean, dude, he was like a really cool, amazing guy. You know, he used to be a big guy. He was funny. We used to chat on what was it AIM? Instant Messenger or whatever. And, you know, kind of like, it was kind of like a, you know, shit talking like, oh yeah, I got these, you got these. Homicide would bust out with some old stuff he found in Japan and try to bust on me. And, you know, Ben Baller was on those chats. There was, you know, there was a whole bunch of different people that were on there. You wouldn't expect that were just kind of, you know, there's just a camaraderie in that sneaker community and whatnot. And, you know, and then he kind of started dating Nicole Richie, and that's when things like really blew up for him. He was doing, I mean, his DJing skills and his mixing, when he was, amazing. The guy was, you know, DJing in clubs in Hollywood, and he was mixing the Kill Bill whistle with Michael Jackson, and it was like Billie Jean, and it was something, it was just like a, it was sick. Like,
you never heard it before, right? I heard it. Yeah. I heard like his sets, like such a moment in time. Like you never heard this mixing, but yeah. And then he was one of the first who had like the knowledge and saw like the sneaker culture of what it kind of is today. Yeah,
but there are kids out there, even at the time. Like I had a 15-year-old. He came up, Aaron. He's like literally was part of all our process. Literally in the. Almost the first couple of years of Blitz going on until now, you know, he was always a big part of the team. And one thing that struck me about him was this guy was like literally an old soul in a 15-year-old kid. He loved DJ AM for all his like DJ skills, mashup music stuff. And also he was super into Dunks and like Air Forces that nobody even gave a shit about again at, you know, his age and at that time at all. Like, Dunks were pretty much dead. Like nobody was really buying them in, 2014, 2015. Right. And here's this kid and he was always all about it. You know, and it's amazing to see people from that time. And even when we did a retrospective at Known Gallery, that was kind of like a big deal. I honestly should have kept that thing up for like a month. But we only did it for three days.
We did a complex. We did that big complex video on that, like early on. And I remember, like, I think it was Tamara Dia who went down to like interview you and like the whole thing. But one of the biggest or like the craziest things about that gallery was that you had like the collection of all of the Drake Air Jordan PEs, and it kind of blew everyone's mind at the time. But then you also had a personal connection to Drake through Oliver, and then Drake started shopping at Project Blitz and you were his sneaker plug or still are.
I mean that was a whole like I said everything I do and move is just purely like organic and like good energy, and everything comes from something. And like literally meeting Oliver was from like Avi Elon in you know Avi that does Better Gift Shop
of course.
And also our boy Q. And so, you know, Quinn, shout out to Q out there in Toronto. But
shout out to Q. Yeah. Q. Yeah.
He's also old head out there. But
Q.
He's still up there. So
yeah.
I mean, you know, that's like where that whole kind of that whole era happened. And like when I did this event, I actually reached out to Drake and I was like, yo, is it cool if I'm doing this whole thing? It's going to be like in an art gallery. It's going to be like showing the design and everything. And I want to have, I'll have two podiums and I want to have some of your sneakers in there if you're if you're down with it. And he was like totally cool with it, wanted to like put it out there. And it was like, it was amazing. He had a whole like OVO collection, things that nobody saw, like the black and gold eights before they were even out there. It was the Anaconda threes, you know, and all the other ones that other people saw, but it was like it was dope. And to have that connection, man, that was a really good night. In fact, I'm gonna put it on you, Matt. So basically, I guess there was in that video, there was some audio that was like in copyright infringement or something that was used. Are we able to can we get that footage out, re-edit it? And
does the video doesn't exist online anymore?
Yeah, you got to retro this thing and put that out there again.
But in the other crazy story you had told, we published it on Complex, is that when Drake was shopping at Project Blitz, he showed up with Rihanna one night and you guys had like a private like party, and you said she's like popping Stellas, like drinking beers, like in the back of your sneaker store, which to me is insane.
Dude, that literally, that's like the coolest, like literally the coolest, chill, most amazing, down to earth, someone in that stature, celeb out there, man or woman, literally Rihanna. That yeah, exactly. No joke. She popped a Stella like it was nothing. That was like a dope ass night for sure.
What about AJ from the Backstreet Boys? Didn't you say you sold some sneakers to him at some point?
Yeah, he came in one day too. That was interesting too. You cool dude, super into shoes. He was like out in there and like scouring through the you know, scouring through the aisles and everything. I mean, a lot of people have been in. So, I mean, I don't know if you know that Scottie Pippen was here a couple of times.
Yeah. You had with the Supreme Up Tempos, right? You had him sign him or something like that.
Yeah. He signed the shoes. That was a cool day. And then he went on ESPN wearing his Supreme box logo with a black blazer. I don't know if you remember seeing that.
Nice.
Catch that thing.
Yeah.
So decked him out a little bit. He was psyched on that. But he's a really good dude. Like,
what about someone like Mark McGuire? Is that a name that I heard?
Yeah, Mark McGuire.
How did that happen? And do you think it's because it's kind of word of mouth or what? Like, we wouldn't consider Mark McGuire into collectible sneakers, but how do you think that came about and what was that experience?
And forgive me if they're listening, I forgot the situation, but it was literally at the Dodger game in the back, somebody was working for them, and then that connection, and then he met and he's like, oh, my kids all love that. And I showed him the site. He contacted me and came through, and he came several times. Most patient father. He was like amazing. Like literally.
Wow.
You know, his kids were, they were so, I mean, dude, they're brought up really well. They were going through, they were super like happy and just thrilled to be there. And dude, he took care of him. He was super patient. That was really like, made me happy to see, you know?
And Dre, one of the interesting things about your store, as we're talking about it, I want to make sure people know that it's not really a store that the public can just go into, right? So it's in an undisclosed location, but you do bring people through sometimes. Why don't you have an actual store? What made you decide to just have all your sneakers in this secret place somewhere?
I mean, no offense to a lot of my good friends growing up. In this world, you know, I grew up with them. I helped supply their stores. There's tons of consignment stores out there, and you know, a lot of people I helped. I didn't ever want to do consignment because I wanted it to be like more of the curator. It's kind of like art. You know, you go to a gallery, you're buying art. It's still a resale. You're not, there's like different prices in buying art as well. You know, you have first tier, second tier, third tier, and it's about your connection, whether you get it for lower or you're paying higher for the same piece of art that someone else would. It's just the same thing as like a resale of a shoe or any other kind of piece of clothing or commodity, even like Super Bowl tickets. You know, you're not paying face, you're paying a premium on it because somebody's getting it for you. Just like that guy on eBay had the Jordan 4s for me and I had to pay him like $25 on top. It was more of a tip. It's like, you know, this is the value you have brought for me being able to have this in my hands at the moment. And that's literally what I wanted to do, was have the emerging e-com, have that open space, you know, connect the world through the internet, but also have the allure of this, you know, incognito, where is this place located type situation in LA that would have, you know, people coming from different parts of the world and like, oh, I need to go there. How do I get there? connect me with this guy, connect me with them, connect me with Blitz. I want to go to this place. What is that sneaker warehouse? What is this? So that's the kind of allure, because nobody was doing that. There wasn't anything like that out there, really. So that had an e-com attached. Obviously there's definitely like different weird scenarios in New York and things like that. But there wasn't anyone that was really like out there and kind of putting the product together like we were, you know?
Dre, you, I think one of the, you've gone through all these levels of reselling, you know, through the years, but I think one of the things that for the viewers who don't know, and I know Joe mentioned it briefly early on, but I think that, you know, you are, your love of SB has kind of helped transform Nike SB and bring it back to a certain extent. Obviously, you know, you had the, we don't need to go too far into it, but you had like the ramp at Complex Con that portrayed all the Nike SB stuff. But then you also had, you know, a close connection with Chase B, which ended up leading to Travis shopping at your store, and you were outfitting him with Paris Dunks, What the Dunks, all the Dunks, pretty much. And you kind of really brought the hype back to Nike SB. So like, how did that happen where you were the person that was like outfitting Travis and Kylie Jenner with the SBs of yesteryear and making them hot now?
I mean, look, if you've known me a long time, I've kind of always played the modest role with a lot of things, but I'll be glad to say I was definitely a big part of this shit. Like definitely a big part of like, the whole SB thing coming back. I mean, this was like a whole plan, because Nikki Diamonds, good friend of mine, Victor Shea, owner of Diamond Supply. So I was in Japan, and you know, he wanted to get into Complex Con, and we were thinking of a way to doing something together, similar to what I did with Jason Mark, but trying to do something different. And I was walking up these stairs to some drinking spot in Tokyo. I forget where it was, somewhere in Shibuya. But I was walking up, and there was like these, there were clear stairs. And when I got up to the top, it just kind of hit me. And I'm like, dude, I need to do a clear skate ramp with all these sneakers in it. And I thought, oh shit, what year is it? It's like an anniversary year. It was something like, was it the 15th anniversary that year? And so I called Nick there, like literally called him up while I was in Tokyo. I was like, bro, I got the whole idea. We're going to do this clear skate ramp with all the Dunks in it. And we're going to have people skating on it. Let's give a call to Nike, try to get them on board and see what happens. The guys at SB were super down. They wanted to do this. It was going to be like incredible. And for me, it was going to be amazing, because like I could actually do what I did and do something with the brand that I always wanted to do, is create this incredible energy. It wasn't about like, you know, selling stuff and making money off. It was literally just making like impact. And so for whatever reason, we couldn't get that that partnership done. I think it was because there was energy in other things, and nobody believed in the Dunk at the time. So, but we did, and I did. And so, yeah, we put it together. Got Casey involved. He got Retina in, created a whole charity out of it. And we put it, made it mostly about like the Diamond Dunk, which is still, to me, even though I love the Paris, that like that Diamond Dunk was the most iconic dunk that came out, because it literally brought so many people in from outside of like skateboarding, outside of sneakerheads. You know, every girl wanted that shoe. You know, every guy like wanted to get it for his girl and himself. And like, these are Jordan heads and all this stuff. People that, you know, the pigeon thing was one thing in New York, right? But those people are out there for a meal ticket. They just wanted that quick. It was like a lottery ticket, right? You just, whoever gets the shoes gets an instant $1,000. This one, people are willing to pay for to get. Everyone wanted it to wear. And so that, to me, made it the most like iconic SB out of it. And luckily I had a ton of them. And so we made these like little like spires at the top that extended the height of the ramp. You know, it was a 30-foot wide ramp. And then we put these like those top pillars on it and filled it all with like diamond lows and highs. And it was like It was literally insane. I mean, I don't even have, I kept trying to find all the pics of it, but we had like 6 pairs of Flams in it. I had like 10 pairs of Paris Dunks in it, like all lined up. Like literally the ends of these things were like $1 million each. Now, at the time, the value of the ramp was like $1 million. And nobody really even could, they couldn't even grasp that fact that there was $1 million of Dunks and some Blazers and whatnot, but SBs inside of that ramp that today is now worth, I mean, dude, probably like
way more than
four, yeah. Like 4 million yeah. now. So from that moment on, it was like G-Eazy, Wale, they were sitting on the ramp. I still have a picture of that. We're all sitting together, like rapping about like, you know, the Dunks, and Wale was literally there. I believe he was on Nike Talk back in the day too.
Yeah.
You know, he's talking about Dunks. G-Eazy knew them all. It started happening where, you know, we started selling all these shoes to all these guys. Even DJ Mustard, you know, Mustard wanted Dunks. You know, Ian Connor, Rocky, Bari. There's a lot of people who just wanted Dunks. There's plenty more. Travis came in, but it was literally one point, because he didn't get any of those, the heavy ones yet. And you know, he had the conversation. He's just like, yo, do you think I could bring the Dunk back? And you know, whether that was talked about with his team and whatnot, but I was like, bro, you are the guy. He was like, what?
So you're saying Travis had the idea to bring the Dunk back? Like it was a plan in his head?
When I saw that, they said nobody, I forgot who wrote that. I said, there's no one Nike can thank but Virgil Abloh for the Off-White Dunk to bring the Dunk back. Like, what are you talking about? That person has no clue. Literally the guy that made it all blow up was Travis.
And he said it to you. He said, do you think I could bring the Dunk back?
Those he said words, he wanted said to bring to the you. Dunk back. Do you think I could bring these back? Like, that was huge. And I was like, hell yeah. If there's anybody,
let's go.
if there's anybody, it's you. Plus he knew his stuff. You know what I mean? You just didn't.
Yeah.
And that was big. Like that just showed that, you know, there was a new king to the throne of like style and fashion. It was, you know, Kanye got dethroned. It was now Travis at that point. You know what I mean? Like the Yeezys is still insane. They still sell. But as far as what someone is wearing, it's now Travis.
Dre, you mentioned wanting to work with Nike SB on that project, and I know it didn't pan out. Do you have an idea over the years, like how Nike feels about you specifically or how they feel about resellers? Because people always want to debate whether or not Nike likes resellers. Does Nike ever reach out to you, or have they, like, how'd you get this shoe?
Yeah. There was a couple of things. There was a couple of emails when the Parises came out, and there was a couple. But, you know, I've had loaned out sneakers to Nike for displays and events, and I had a lot of good friends there that, you know, they sent me stuff because they knew I would wear it, and they knew I would like literally, you know, promote it. Like I was in clubs, I was at events, I was flying all over the world, you know, going to the Masters in Augusta with my boy Sevi. I was going to
that guy. Sorry. That guy, that when you came to the office, this guy was like, do you want to go to the Masters? And I was like, no one gets to go. Sevi, I guess. Yeah. I met him with you. He's like, no one gets to go to the Masters. He's like, I could get you to the Masters. That's so funny and random. Yeah. You bring it up. And I'm sorry to interrupt, but the Masters was last weekend. But sorry.
Go ahead. Yeah. I know.
I got to go there. I got
to
go
to Sevi.
Yeah. I got to go to Blitz first and then the Masters.
Exactly. Okay. Let's figure that out first. Yes. Right? I heard that 100 times. I was like, I'm gonna stop by. And it's like, yo,
my bad. Yes.
This guy's going to get hot dogs out here instead of coming over here. It's like, come on, bro.
But forgot about that. Sorry.
You know, and that was like cool because like that's where, you know, you're seeding stuff to people. It's like, okay, cool. You give somebody big, huge, mega Instagram following that's posting all day long and worrying about their captions. But like, it's one thing to get it's people that are backstage in at festivals, going out in the middle of thing, having people actually see them on foot in places. Man, that was me. So, I mean, God bless those people that actually, like, you know, got me pairs of things. The best thing I got recently was the white Master Air Max 1, which is
from Nike,
which is, which is worth, you know, 15,000, 20,000 brand new, like dead stock.
So do you think that Nike in general does or doesn't like resellers? Do you think they care?
I think that there's definitely the higher ups and people that must know that the reason why the product sells itself in general is not because of the story behind the sneakers anymore. That's what it was, you know, 20 years ago, 15 years ago. But literally now these days, it's literally what the value is and perceived value is. It's an unfortunate situation, but if you're able to understand that, formula, it's, you know, it's much better to understand, like, how do you distribute, you know, product everywhere? Like, people that are going crazy for stuff are literally seeing what it's worth, and then they decide on if they want it or not. It's kind of sad because it's not like how we used to, choose what we want to buy for ourselves and wear and whatnot. You know, there's not everyone that's a Matt Welty that's wearing every obscure Adidas out there, right?
Yeah.
You're always wearing, like, you know, the cool ones or the Yeezys or whatnot. This guy's always pumping those. I guarantee you there's definitely a few people out there, maybe five in America, that actually follow this man and actually, like, bust those. And they bust all his amazing sneakers. Wait, I'm not even making jokes. Why is everyone laughing? So, but you understand, there's always somebody out there. And it's like, if you know, kids had their own style, we're able to look at people's, like, okay, cool. Be out there and make your own. Find something that you really like and run with it instead of, like, oh, it's worth this much. Like, let me flex. You know what I mean? It's you know, I much rather appreciate someone's collection, like Air Mag, Afro Kicks, and all those guys. Sorry for everyone else I just didn't mention. But, you know, you got a bunch of, like, GRs and cool stuff all in the mix. But your collection tells a long story. It tells a story, and you put as much in as you could afford. And, you know, I wouldn't have a collection today if I wasn't part of that industry, like, straight up. I would definitely be wearing sneakers, but I wouldn't be able to have all these back here unless I was, like, moving kilos out of Colombia or something. You know what I mean?
Which,
like,
you weren't, just to be clear.
Yeah. Which I wasn't. Yeah.
Drake, okay. speaking of stories, speaking of stories, I can't not bring this story up that you told me, because I think it's one of the craziest. I mean, you've told a lot of crazy stories during this thing, but I think one of the crazier stories that you've told me is that a very pregnant Beyonce and Jay-Z show up to Project Blitz, and she can't tie her shoes, so she buys Nike Adapts from you, and then Jay-Z bought, like, the New Balance 1300s because Emery Jones put them on. You, like, tell that story, like,
oh, okay
how the hell that happened.
Yeah, man, so that's obviously through, like Upscale Vandal Mike.
Shout out to Mike,
man. good friend of mine. He introduced me to Emery at, like, Agenda years ago, and we always kept in touch, and Emery was always wanted to come through and check out some old Air Maxes and whatnot. And finally, just the call happened. I was actually on my way to a meeting in Hollywood, so I'm, like, halfway there. And I got the call, like, yo, they're on the way. They're coming down. I'm like, wait, what? So I had to, like, flip a U-turn, cancel that meeting, and call everybody and say, yo, clean up. Like, you know, get yourself together and
sweep
make sure
the floor.
Yeah. You know, make sure everything's good. The funny thing is, I'll tell you that in a second, but I actually ran into Jay at on Melrose at Sporty LA in 2001. And I was with a friend of mine. He was just in there, and it was kind of cool. He didn't really remember because I brought it up to him. I was like, bro, I met you in the thing, and we talked about the Wu-Tang dunk. That was kind of like a quick little thing. Sporty LA, I think that was like year 2000, 2001, one of those two. But So anyway, so he came in, and they were buying all these shoes. Like, B was pregnant. One of the sweetest women I've ever met too. Super cool. Like, they had a whole, you know, team there of people. And we were showing them the Hyper Adapts because around the time that those came out. And and she was like, okay, look, try them on. And they just kind of, you know, it was the black ones. And when she put them on, it just became a whole thing. And she was like, oh, these are amazing, I'm getting these. And then she bought a bunch of gifts for a lot of people. And then I sold the you know, the Coco Air Force Ones, the originals.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking about, no, I'm sorry.
No, the 1996, the snake, the ivory snake skin.
Yeah. Ivory snake skin. Thank you, Brendan. You're an icon for that. The 1996s, And he wore them to the Clipper game that night. I didn't want to take pics.
Oh, yeah. He wore those courtside.
I really wasn't the guy that was like, oh, yeah, let's take pics of all this stuff and all these people and all that. It's like, yo, have your thing, do your time. And if there ever pics kind of happen out of it, let it be organic, you know? And so
I got to do one quick aside. I love your restraint on that, because I hate when you buy a pair of shoes from somebody and then they go tell on you like, yo, this person just bought them from me. Like, don't worry about where I got them. I got them. Anyway, yeah, sorry. Yeah, let's get back to Beyonce.
Yeah. So, and then he wore that at the Clipper game. I think we actually kind of did repost that picture of that because it was kind of funny. And then, you know, your boy PG Nose quickly put up a pair for like some crazy ass numbers, like 15,000. Sure. And then it was amazing. It was great. I kind of laughed. I was like, yo, you saw that? And then he's like, yeah, whatever. But that was like a funny day. Anyways, going back to the New Balance, that was kind of like a big one. So I mean, Emery pulled those out. He's like, yo, you know what these are, to Jay. And it was a big deal. And I was shocked to see, but I guess there was a whole DMV story to him it was a cool moment. So they both bought those pair of those New Balance 1300 JPs. It was like, it was cool.
Dre, for someone like Travis, when we see kind of these old dunks still going up, are you in constant communication with the clientele of like, I think you need these, or they're like, do you have anything? What's it like the product sourcing now for those type of real collectors?
Okay, well, you know, there's like the new age collectors, cannabis industry guys and all this stuff. And so the same guys that were coming in for box logos and Yeezys turned into box logos and Off-White. And then they're coming in looking for chrome and dunks. So all those type of collectors is kind of like, okay, whatever is hot in the moment. So that's kind of also what drives everything up too. So because of the scarcity of you know, everybody dusted dunks, those SBs and stuff back in the day. So finding dead stock ones, there's not so much out there, hundreds or 1,000 or two pairs, if that, of some of those early ones that are out there available still, you know? And so kind of everybody kind of knows their move already. They're already learning before they even come in. And they, you know, sometimes they get surprised by a few crazy pieces here and there. Yeah, I mean, you know, as far as like telling people what's hot anymore, there's people out there that are kind of like listening, but there's other people that already have their whole idea set. And that's usually based on what's hot at the moment and how much it's going for. So everyone will come in and be like, oh, let me get that Paris for 40 when they didn't even want to pay 30 before, when they didn't even want to pay 20 before. And now they're kind of like, okay, let me get it at this point now. You know what I mean? It's like, oh.
Just like Tan back in the day.
Just like Tan back in the day. Put it back to him, you know? But that's the interesting part. I mean, you know, and I got a lot of guys on it. And that, you know, a lot of guys are also part of Blitz themselves, like Yeezy Busta, for example. If you ask him, he was you know, a lot of kids and stuff that grew up in 2015, 14, you know, no one cared about dunks. They're off everybody's radar. There's nobody that was doing YouTube or whatever that was putting up SBs and dunks at the time, except our boy Frenelations. But
that's the one. Cause we had done the story when Kylie had broken out the Doom dunks. And like, it was like a 6.5.
Yeah.
And I think I had spoken to Fran, and Fran was like, those are my shoes.
Yeah.
And like, Fran sold those sneakers to you, and then you sold them to Kylie Jenner because Travis had put out the ask for you to get those. Is that like how that worked?
Yeah, I got requested to pick those up, find them and do that.
And that's what I meant. Is there a running list? Is there a list still of shoes that people are looking for you to get for them?
But a lot of times, you know, it's a lot of people don't want certain things to be said or told, you know? So like, you know, sometimes when there's a story that can be said, like, you know, it's done. There's certain, some things that parts of it that shouldn't be said. And there's other things that can be said, but it's definitely
his shoes
definitely ended up on her feet. Right. To be sold, not told.
Dre, Dunn touched on it, but at the beginning of this, you were like, you know, I may start posting more. What's the balance for you being behind the scenes and supplying sneakers and making sure the word gets out that these rare pairs are coming from Project Blitz? Is it something that you think that now in 2021 you have to do more of, or what?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like I mentioned, Yeezy Busta, he's actually on board completely as like a director of our marketing. He's actually a really amazing dude, really intelligent, really good kid. Not fake, super authentic with everything. And that's actually what I live by, is to have really good, authentic people that aren't totally nuts and like full of themselves, around me and literally a part of the brand. And that's literally the whole situation why we're going to go the direction we're going. There's going to be a huge evolution, even the way that product is coming in, even the way the product is being sold. I can't really touch on that right now, but we're definitely trying to get more eyes on the site, and it's literally not just going to be an online situation or not public anymore. We're going to be opening up the store that, you know, the pandemic has literally caused some issues why we haven't been able to open it yet, but it's going to be on La Brea in Hollywood. So wow. Can't wait for that.
Awesome.
Yeah. Actually inviting you guys, you can, hopefully we'll have a full size run episode in the new store and a sneaker shopping.
We'll make the trip.
It's something that you'll never see. And I mean, that's why I think that because of who you guys are and what you guys bring to the whole industry and community, you need to come see this, because this is like raw. Well, this is, you don't get to see that anywhere. This is not like corporate money pumped into a place and like, you know, creating some sort of like a situation, like what it is, wall to wall sneakers, which by the way, I actually want to ask you a question. So when you saw like wall to wall sneakers, Flight Club was the first one that kind of did that, right?
Right.
The floor to ceiling. You know where that came from? You should ask D that question.
Dre, you gave him the idea?
Well, he came to the gallery, that known gallery on Fairfax for retrospective. And he's like, Dre, and that's where we really started talking, because he came in physically, came right up to me and said, Dre, you gave me the idea for all the stores. Like, this is beautiful. It's amazing. And that's when we like reconnected. And so that's why you see Flight Club looked the way it did after that moment, 2016, because this was November 15. So like shortly after that, they redid the whole look, and it became what it was today. And then now you see all the other stores, like the ones popping up on Melrose, Stadium, everyone doing the wall-to-wall sneakers, whether it was long or high, it all came from retrospective.
I'd love to hear those Domeney stories too, because he's such an elusive figure.
I'll take that on my on my lapel. Yeah. I'll take that on my lapel.
Dre, I got one more for you. I mean, over the years, you've bought and sold everything. You've had every sneaker in some form or another. Is there any sneaker that you wouldn't sell that's in your personal collection that you would always want to have for sentimental purposes?
Oh, man. We have a running joke over here with like the guys at the warehouse. One of the longtime guys, Damien, he always busted on me like, oh, it's close to your heart. You don't want to let something go. And I get pissed off. And it's like somebody, I was like, dude, you sold my whatever it was, you know? But there are a few things that I kind of don't ever want to sell, but I think, you know, for the right price, like, you know, everyone has to, unless you're like raking in millions a year, like everything may have a price one day, but literally if there was like three shoes I never had to sell, it would be one, the Paris Dunk that I have dead stock that I kept in my collection aside from all the other ones, because it was like literally the pair that had the most color all over it. And it had the best placement of images and everything of all the 10 and a halves. So that being one, right behind me, if you can take a look, that, the PE Kobe 8 that he wore game worn. I mean, I guess it can be, you know, I kind of looked up, zoomed in on pictures, and like the actual like wrinkles and creases on it kind of matched up to the one that he was playing in the game where he was lifting Jordan up. So, I mean, the fact that Kobe passed, I mean, me being from LA, me being a Laker fan, you know, that's something I never would hope to have to come to the point where I would have to sell it. But yeah, I think those are pretty much like the untouchables. And the third one being, the Space Jam Jordan 11s, one that he wore in the movie. But I think that one, we'll see.
I'll just retire off of that one.
Yeah. Well, Dre, obviously we could keep going, and we probably will down the road. Can't thank you enough for taking the time, and we'll definitely see you soon. Thanks for so much for chopping it up with us.
Dude, always a pleasure with all you guys, Joe, Brendan, yeah. Matt. Hopefully see you soon, and hopefully in LA, and you know, come check out the spot. Finally.
Thank you, Dre. We appreciate
absolutely.
It.
Take care, man. Thank
all
you.
All right, guys. Peace.
Our producer is Dave Matthews. Our associate producer is Jasmine Plata. Sound engineering done by Kyle Garvey. Special thanks to Jennifer Stewart and Shiva Bayet. The Complex Sneakers Podcast is a production of the Complex Podcast Network.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.